Today's program is brought to you by TechServe. For more information, visit techserve.com.
You are listening to You Look Hungry, the New Orleans Sessions. You are listening to You Look Hungry on Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Helen Holliman, and I'm broadcasting live from P&J Oyster Company in the French Quarter of New Orleans. I'm joined today by brothers Al and Sal Sanseri. Thanks so much for coming on the show.
Thanks for inviting us.
Yeah, so...
You look pretty hungry, too. You love oysters, right?
I love oysters. So I'm in the right place, apparently.
Yes, you are.
So, you know, this company is over 136 years old. Can you guys kind of talk about the history of the company and what you're doing here?
Yeah, you know, Sal and I are the third generations in our family. We have another generation before us, our cousin, who are the Jurisiches. P and J stands for Popich and Jurisich. It's a lot easier to say P and J than Popich and Jurisich. So since the beginning, we called the company P and J. My grandfather worked for our cousin and his partner for 17 years before becoming a full-fledged partner in the business. And our family's heritage is in the banana business, because when we emigrated through the city of New Orleans back in the 1850s, a number of my great-grandfather's siblings were in the banana business, both in Honduras and around the other ports of the U.S. In this country, and handled the bananas that came in that were shipped from around the world and then sold. But our family, my grandfather started here in 1921, working with Joe Jurisich and John Popich. And my dad came to work here in the early 50s and took over the business from his daddy, and then ended up buying out the partners in the 60s. And my brother and myself came in the early 80s and took over for my dad. My sister came in 1991 and worked here for some 20 years and left right after the oil disaster in 2010. And my son has worked here since 2004 while he was still in school, trying to get him to understand how hard this business is, but hoping to get him to go to school and continue his education. But he loves the business and he wants to continue it, and hopefully we'll be able to do that.
Can you guys talk a little bit about the history of oysters in Louisiana, the culture of it, and how it's kind of progressed over the years?
Well, the oyster business has been around forever. You know, the Indians, the Native Americans here, started far before Europeans started to come here and settle. But as it was settled, you know, early on, you had the French people that emigrated here that began this business in mainly central Louisiana. And the Islanos, the people from the islands, and Spanish people mixed, they came in the eastern part of the state, St. Bernard Parish, settled there, and began that oyster business there. The Croatian people on the west side of the river in Plaquemines Parish are known to have been very much involved in the development and farming end of the business. Italians on the west side of the river in Jefferson Parish, and as I told you, the French, who were in central Louisiana mainly. And since the 1600s, people in the European settlers started this business. As New Orleans grew, oysters were a very big part of the community and a very important food source.
So I think I heard a rumor that this place used to be a bordello, this building.
The building you're sitting in right now was a residence, and it was a bordello. It was before our family took it over as an oyster business, but this building that we're in is two buildings combined, and at the place that you walk through was a blacksmith shop, and our building across the street was a was a stable. It housed the General Jackson's horses during the war of the Battle of New Orleans, and but this building that we're in, this residence, was a bordello before we took it over.
Seems kind of like a natural progression.
Yeah, it was. I mean, oysters and things that you like to do go together.
They do go together. Well, so can you describe a little bit about the layout of what happens in this building in terms of, you know, describe like an average day?
An average day today or an average day prior to the oil disaster? Because there is a total difference in what we do today in comparison to what we used to do. Because our typical day when I came here all the way through the oil disaster, in exception of Hurricane Katrina for a couple of months, started with unloading trucks that we had fresh oysters that we picked up from the oyster farmers along the coastal Louisiana areas, but mainly on the eastern side of the state, in St. Bernard, Plaquemines, and Jefferson parishes. And we'd unload the trucks, prepare our shucking facility for the day's work, get it all sanitized and cleaned up before the shuckers came in. That the shuckers would be here at 5 o'clock sharp, and we'd start shucking at that time and shuck till 11 o'clock every day. And we would go through anywhere between 12,000 and 14,000 pounds of oysters a day that we shucked. And we also sold between 12 and 15,000 pounds of oysters in the shell every day, as well as sell a lot of shucked oyster meat. And the shucked oyster meat, as you know, because you were in the business here, is a gallon oysters that are we make our pull boys with, and our oysters Rockefeller and oysters Bienville and oysters Foch, all those different great baked oyster dishes. And we'd sell that every day, and they'd be delivered all over the city of New Orleans, brought to airports. People would walk in through the building and pick up their oysters and take them home during a normal day. And after we finished shucking, we would go ahead and clean up everything and get it all taken care of where it looked like we didn't even operate here by noon every day. And then in the same, we'd send a couple of trucks down, go pick up fresh oysters again, and start the whole thing off the next day again.
So after the oil spill, what is an average day like?
Well, the average day today, we still start early in the morning, and rather than shucking our own oysters, we purchase a few shucked oysters of the higher quality, like we were able to get, and repackage them in our own containers, make sure that the oysters meet our specs, something that we would be willing and wanting to sell, which would be an extra select or select oyster. And we pick up oysters in the shell that are made specifically for the half shell market that are sold at the oyster bars. And we distribute them, we repack the shucked oysters and sell them strictly to a certain few among the local wholesale customers.
So what is the life of, you know, oyster fishermen that you typically source from now? I mean, how are their beds doing and, you know?
Well, what we, this is Sal, by the way. I've been a little bit, I'm back now. But pretty much it's a totally different dynamic right now. Farmers are having to go through a little bit of a challenge in that the product is not as predominant. Usually after the water events, the freshwater events that occurred for the spill and after, because we had some flooding after the spill too, you usually see a lot of growth. And that is a young oyster, which is spat, which attaches to culch and other oyster reef. Well, we haven't seen that. So they're concerned, we're concerned about the future and about how productive oysters are going to be in Louisiana Gulf South. So right now it's an insecure business. People are trying to do some planting of limestone and oyster shell to try and build back up their reefs, but they're skeptical. We're still unsure on how it's going to be in the future. So, but we're here, we're going to stay, we're going to keep moving forward. This is what we know, and we plan on doing this for the next 136 years. Maybe not me, but hopefully the family.
Well, is the government or is BP helping in any way environmentally, in terms
environmentally? Well, if you ask them, they are. they're doing a great job, right?
are there any, you know, laws being passed by the government, or is there anything since the oil spill that has helped in any way?
In reference to rebuilding the fisheries in southern Louisiana, I don't see anything that's actually implemented. But I know what needs to occur, and that is to rebuild our coastline and to replenish through some of the work that's been done. It is some of the monies from planting, and that is one thing on a small level. But it's going to take quite a bit to rebuild our coast and to rebuild, you know, the oyster reefs. So have they done enough? No.
How, in a perfect world, how could you rebuild the coast? Like, what does it take? Does it mean to rebuild marshes, or how does it work?
Well, to me, it would take, which is a different approach to some opinions, but smaller freshwater diversions, a major silt movement to take advantage of the Mississippi Delta, plant mango trees and grasses, and to, of course, rebuild barrier islands that were existing prior. So the combination of all those would dictate a stronger coast, a better ecological environment for fisheries, and you know, the future. But the key is, when's that going to take place? How long will it take to get it done? And will it be in time? Because we lose so much every day.
We're going to take a really quick break, but when we get back, we have more from Al and Sal Sanseri of P&J Oyster Company. You're listening to You Look Hungry. Stay tuned.
I need a new computer. I guess I'm going to have to go to the Apple Store.
What? Don't go to the Apple Store. Go to TechServe.
What's TechServe? I thought Apple Store was the only choice.
No, you're crazy. TechServe is so much better than the Apple Store. They're New York's original and still the best Apple computer, iPod, and iPhone store and repair shop. Plus, the store is really cool. You gotta go check it out. They're located at 119 West 23rd Street.
Well, that settles it. I'm headed to TechServe.
TechServe is a proud sponsor of HeritageRadioNetwork.org. For more information, visit TechServe.com. That's TechServe.com.
If you're just tuning in, you are listening to You Look Hungry on Heritage Radio Network. I'm still your host, Helen Holliman, and I'm joined today by brothers Al and Sal Sanseri of P&J Oyster Company. And before the break, we were discussing what it takes to rebuild the coastline of Louisiana. And Al, I would love to hear what you think what it would take.
I believe that you need to start off with the barrier islands in repairing them and getting them back to where they were. Just like up in New York, you have Long Island, a big island. And as storms, y'all have a lot of nor'easters that come through. If the island wasn't out there, the city would get these direct hits regularly from very big systems that come through. And what's happened down here is that we don't have these big barriers any longer because they're... Because of the amount of storm surge that we've gotten over the years, because of the 10,000 plus miles of oil and gas lines that have been put in to pump oil to be distributed all across America, we have lost this coastline much more in an accelerated fashion than we would have had none of this oil and gas activity taken place. Following the rebuilding of the barrier islands, you would need to try to place sediment because we have lots of sediment that makes its way down the river. But because the levees have been put in place to protect the people that live along the river so they don't flood all the time every time a river comes up, and also to protect the shipping industry. The levees are put in place so we have a certain draft that big ships can come and bring all the goods that people around America are fortunate enough to have from all over the world. And had the levees not been there, we'd have a natural flow of the river. We wouldn't be dealing with the coast that's eroding right now. If they had not put the oil pipeline canals in and if they had covered them up like they were supposed to, we wouldn't be dealing with the accelerated erosion that we're dealing with. But you know, these are the things that we're dealing with. Then the following thing would be the fresh water that's necessary to give the marsh the nourishment that's necessary. You know, because there are levees there and they don't get this natural flow of fresh water as they would typically if a river exceeded its shore, they need to put fresh water. and it needs to be done in a way in which it mimics Mother Nature. When you would have a high river, it would place that fresh water into it, and that would nourish the marshes where the fish nurseries are, where the oyster nurseries are, where the crab and other types of fin fish, shrimp grow. And that would be the way I would do it. But I'm only one of many people that have different thoughts. And most people that think you need to put big sediment diversions, and that'll be all the answer. But we've noticed with the couple of diversions that they have now, it isn't enough. They do not do what they're supposed to do, because you can never tell when Mother Nature will put enough sediment down there. If you don't place it and put it where you want it to be and then nourish it, that's the only way that we'll be able to do something in a time frame that will actually be able to protect our coast and our citizens that live here. This infrastructure here in Louisiana is important to the rest of the country. We're one of the biggest ports. We're the second leading fisheries state in the country, only second to Alaska. So in the lower 48, Louisiana produces more seafood than anywhere in the country. We lead the nation in oil and gas activity. This nation relies on the oil and gas, not only that's produced here in the state of Louisiana, but comes in through our port and is sent all around the country. And if Congress and the citizens around the country would place that importance into where it should be, understanding that what happens here, how we're affected down here, will affect them, we'll be a lot better off. We'll be a lot better off.
What is the life of, say, like a shrimper or, you know, somebody, a fisherman whose main product is blue crab or something of that nature today? How are they doing? And, you know, what do you see their future holding?
Well, I think the most affected products are oysters, number one, and crab. So the crabbers are having a very, very tough time. Shrimp are coming back. Again, the oyster doesn't move much. and the crabs don't move too fast. So the next level, of course, you know, for shrimpers, that moves a whole lot more. Therefore, you have people that are going through, once again, some tough times. And, you know, it all depends on the production of the product itself, the fishery itself. And in every phase of our Louisiana fisheries, we're all having a tough time. Shrimp are doing a little bit better. Fin fish are doing a little bit better. But the crab and oysters, not so much. Not so much. So the life is tough. How long are you going to be in it? Don't know.
Well, on a happier note, I want to know, what is your favorite way to eat an oyster?
Raw.
Raw?
Raw.
I love raw oysters, but if I was the best way that I like to eat oysters is on an Italian dish called Oysters Mosca. That's my favorite way to eat them. But I eat those oysters raw every morning and get to taste them. And I've been blessed to being able to do that, because it's been a wonderful breakfast for the last 30-something years.
And, you know.
You know what's going on next week, right?
Tell me.
Well, the New Orleans Oyster Festival. It's a third annual, and it's taken us some time to get to this point. We originally were going to have it in 2006, Well, you heard of that girl, Katrina, right?
Yes, she's awful.
B-I-T. So anyway, that was pushed back. And then we were going to have it in 2010, all set up, ready to go. And then they had that little spill. So we went forward with it, and it was amazing. Because the main thing is we want to celebrate the oyster capital of America and to celebrate the chefs, restaurateurs, and farmers that have created that right here in the French Quarter of New Orleans. I mean, nowhere in the world can, well, I don't know about the world, but definitely in America, can you eat more oysters? More oysters are consumed within our 13 by 10 blocks than anywhere else. So we just have an incredible time, celebrate. We have the Oyster Shucking Contest, P&J Oyster Shucking Contest. We have the Acme Oyster Eating Contest. Now, you've heard of the Nathan's Hot Dog?
Yes.
Same people sanction that. The International Federation of Competitive Eaters. Those guys come down here and, you know, make sure that this thing's run right. And the Acme folks do a beautiful job. By the way, the Black Widow, 10 minutes.
Yes.
46 dozen.
That's
insanity.
It's a little scary.
Yeah, it's a lot of oysters.
I actually had Crazy Legs Conti, who has won it before, on my radio show, and to this day, his favorite thing to eat competitively is oysters. So,
well, funny you mention his name, because he will be here next week to go on the P&J Oyster Boat Tour. So we do a little educational tour for many of the people that are part of the festival, and that's going to be next week.
I'm Helen.
Hi, Helen. I'm Blake.
I'm fifth generation.
Yeah.
Fifth
sitting
generation.
Right here in front of you.
Al's son, Sal's nephew.
So what's, you know,
my role here?
Well, what are your thoughts, you know, on, you know, what are you doing here? And how does it feel to be a fifth generation
in this
town, in this business?
It's a lot easier than they had it.
That's right. I don't know about that.
Yeah, it's
it's pretty rough.
It's all right. It's pretty scary with what's going on. I mean, I don't know. I mean, my uncle and my dad have had to deal with a lot of stuff in the past, and I mean, this is my time for trials and tribulations. I'm not sure, I mean, what our future holds, and, since I've only been in the business about 6 years, I really don't have a grasp on what I need to be looking for, except for the fact that the young oysters are not, growing. They're spawning out there, but they're just not growing. Mm-hmm. So I'm not certain what, but I mean, I'm pushing forth. I'm happy to be in the business. It's a very unique business. Very it's got a great heritage. Very saturated in New Orleans history. I mean, there's so much unique about this business. We're the last processing plant in the French Quarter. There's no other processing plants around.
Have y'all ever had any gnarly shucking injuries? No, just perfect every time.
Not perfect, but I don't recall last time we got one of our shuckers, you know, stabbing themselves.
Yeah,
I mean a bunch of nicks and scrapes here and there, but I mean nothing like a knife through the hand or I don't know, jugular.
Who amongst the three of you is the fastest shucker?
Fastest?
Mm-hmm.
We've never done that. We should do it right now.
Yeah, you should.
I think so. It's contact.
Right now. Let's dodge the knives.
By the way, what's your favorite oyster dish?
Oh, man. There's so many. I love fried oysters. I love raw oysters. But oyster po' boys are probably, I know that's kind of a lame answer, but
it's not a bad answer.
You know, with a little remoulade or something.
Okay, well, if you look at the menu at the festival, you'll see more po' boys than anything else, but unique po' boys.
Mm-hmm.
So you probably hit that right about the po' boy.
What's you sort of like to eat raw oysters as well, or do you have a
My favorite is raw.
Yeah.
Yeah, because there's so many dishes. My second favorite would probably be this marinade that Sal makes. And it's like this, it's like mostly ketchup, a little bit of Worcestershire sauce, lemon juice, a little salt and pepper, a bunch of vegetables like onions, the trinity, celery, bell peppers.
Habanero.
Ooh.
You put heat habanero in there?
Oh yeah, you gotta heat it up. You gotta heat that up.
That sounds awesome.
Jalapeno.
I don't think you did that for the Christmas parties.
Man. No, I usually do.
I don't think you did.
If I can't find them,
because they have the older generation coming in here. You don't want to like burn them up,
spice them up.
No, don't do it.
Blow out their taste buds. Well, so what's on the horizon for P&J in the future?
Well, we, you know, are optimistic about the future. You know, we've been here 126 years, 136 years, going through a lot of ups and downs. But people love oysters. We love what we do. We believe what we do is important to the community. It's important to people, the restaurateurs that showcase our product. It's important to all the people that we've served oysters to for so long, so many generations of them. And as much of it being our business, it's kind of like oyster water running through our bloodstream. We want it to continue to flow, and do see a future, and we're going to make sure that we're going to be able to be successful to provide oysters to everyone in our future.
And one thing that you may see more of, depending upon the production of oysters in Louisiana, is some more aquafarming. So we're going to look at doing it. We've already started on a very small scale, but depending upon the demand, the cost of production, you will probably see something very similar to the way they do it on the West Coast. So that chapter will be turning soon.
And the way that they're doing it in New York. You know, the Flowers Oyster Company in New York, they've been doing it and practicing aquaculture techniques for a very long time now. Had they not done that, there would be very little production out of New York. And they're probably the largest oyster producer in that state. And we're going to be following in their footsteps. We've never needed to do that down here because we have been blessed with natural reproduction cycles and natural oysters. But being that things have changed since Deepwater Horizon, if we did not change what we do and take hold of our destiny by doing hatcheries and farming aquaculture techniques that are done all over the world, we may or may not be able to survive. But that's why we're doing that now, and so we will be able to provide oysters to people for years to come.
Well, thank you so much for taking the time to come on my show. And listeners out there can go to P&J.
Oysterlover.com.
Oysterlover.com. Okay.
Yes.
And do you have a Twitter?
We have Facebook.
Facebook. Okay.
Facebook.
Search for P&J
Oyster
Company.
Yes. Can't miss it.
Okay.
And always check out the menu of the festival.
Yes.
New Orleans Oyster Festival.org. The most unique, just different ways to be treated to a great oyster dishes.
Well, thanks again, and thanks to our listeners and everybody out there at Heritage Radio. I'll see y'all next week.
Thanks for listening to this program on the Heritage Radio Network. You can find all of our archived programs on heritageradionetwork.com, as well as a schedule of upcoming live shows. You can also podcast all of our programs on iTunes by searching Heritage Radio Network in the iTunes Store. You can find us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter for up-to-date news and information. Thanks for listening.